take it to the top. To the top. Now the bottom of the top. To the top. To the top.
Welcome to Take It to the Top, the podcast produced by and hosted by Ryan and Richie Phillips, former CMA award-winning radio personality from Albany, New York. I'm obnoxious Mr. Big Voice. I've got great pipes and you don't. That being said, without further ado, here's Richie.
Wow, jingle singers and announcer, we spare no expense on this program. This is Take It to the Top. This is the podcast where sometimes you on Facebook tell me who to get on the show, and I take it to the top until I get them. Sometimes it's my idea. In this particular case, I'm going to be honest with you, it was totally my idea. I wanted this guy on the show since I've started the podcast. I won't get into how I met him originally. It wasn't really a cold call. But ladies and gentlemen, as I stand by my piano and play some of his stuff like, ooh la 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 la, you're looking good, Carlene, and oh, another six-pack summer. And it's been a long time since I've seen your face. I knew we'd meet again another time, another place. In my next 30 years, we're going to have some fun. An American child. Oh, I could go on and on, but you don't want to hear from me. You want to hear from award-winning, multi-award-winning singer, songwriter, and yes, television personality, Phil Vassar. But before that, as you know, I have no sponsors for this show. The sponsor is moi. So if you're looking for entertainment for your next wedding, your next private party, your next conference, your next retirement party, your next anniversary party, for all the options available, just go to my website, which is hirerichie.com. Spelled out, it's
hirerichie.com.
That's hirerichie.com. Okay, that business is out of the way. I'm going to try to get Phil on the phone while I play a little bit of his new song. This is a fantastic song called Fall Crazy. Found him, the great singer-songwriter extraordinaire, Phil Vassar. Hello, Phil.
What are you doing, my brother? How you doing?
I am doing great. It's so good talking to you.
And I'm so happy to hear from you. It's been way too long.
It has been way too long, and I think of a four-letter word when I think of Phil Vassar, and it's not Phil. It's not Phil, and it's not the word you're thinking. It's the word, and it's always stuck in my mind. It is the word nice. You were nice to us when you came here. You sat in when I was on radio. You sat on our morning show the whole morning. You put me on a stage one time. I played with you. Who does that?
Well, you know, you're a fellow piano player. We got to have some fun, so it's always good, right? You know.
Well, who would do that? I mean, it's so great. Do you think it's important, the word nice, to be nice in the music business? You know, you always hear like, "Hey, nice guys finish last. You can't be nice."
No, you know, I don't think it's important in the music business. I really don't. But I just think it's nice in general to be nice to people. I mean, whether you're, you know, I don't know. There's just some people that just aren't nice, I guess. I'm not fans of those people, you know. And I just think that, you know, it's just life too short just to treat people like crap. I mean, just be good. And people, I've always found that people will generally be nice back.
Well, but it always stuck in our mind. I mean, whenever your name was mentioned, we said, "Oh, he was unbelievable when he came here." And it gets around. That's you can become famous by word of mouth, I think, in small areas.
Well, you know, that's funny that you say that, but I do think I love working with people that are just good people, you know. Right. And I do in general. I mean, I've had to trust me. I mean, you've been in this business a long time, and there's definitely a lot of the other guys, you know, but, you know, I think for the most part, you know, it's, you know, there's some pretty, pretty good people in our business, you know, and you know, there's a lot of narcissistic folk, you know, also.
Right.
So I think, you know, so for that being said, I just like, you know, it's good to have relationships, and you and I, you know, we still talk, we still text, and,
sure,
you know, and the cool thing about that is just like, I think, you know, I'm lucky to be able to travel all over the world, and I have friends, literally have friends everywhere. And I love that. I mean, that's a cool thing to be able to say. It's like, you know, whenever I come to, you know, Albany, or whenever I come to go to London or to Milan, or I can call, literally call somebody up and they'd come pick me up if I broke down somewhere or something, you know?
Yeah, but that's a tribute to you. It really is. Have you ever played the game, The 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon? Do you know that game?
Oh, I know it. I know the game, yes.
Right. All right, so we're going to play the game with you, with your life. Let's connect Phil Vassar with Engelbert Humperdinck. Go.
Oh, well, that's pretty easy.
I read about this. I couldn't believe it. This is a great story.
Yeah, that was my very first recording was by Engelbert. And the first song I ever wrote that got recorded by anybody, you know. And of course, he was such a great guy and still is. I mean, I've told this a million times. I mean, he was the first person to call me when I won Songwriter of the Year in like 98 or 9 or whatever it was. Right? He called me literally that morning. He goes, I heard you. I'm like, who is this? Right? I'm like, is this really you? But he was so cool because when he cut that song of mine, it was a song called Once in a While, which never really did much. But of course, he said, man, I really love the way you sing. And he said, would you please sing the scratch vocal? I want to copy what you're doing. And so he brought me to the studio and then he took us out to dinner. And I mean, it was just a pretty wonderful experience, you know. And here's a legend. This guy had a million people in his fan club, a million. I mean, think about it, right? So, but he was, big, growing up a hero because my grandparents loved him, my mother and my grandmother. And so that's when my grandmother goes, well, you've made it now.
And that was early in your career, very early.
First thing, and then of course nothing really happened after that. But pretty funny.
You're still fighting to be a success.
Right, still fight.
I've been skimming all kinds of articles to prepare for this, and I skimmed one article that said that you only learned the piano once you moved to Nashville. Is that true? I mean, you really weren't playing it as a kid?
I wasn't, but what I did do was we had this piano downstairs in my basement that like one of my distant cousins had. It was an old one. It didn't work very well, but when I was in high school, I played football and I ran track.
Right.
So during two-a-day football practices, I heard Easy Like Sunday Morning by the Commodores.
Right.
And I said, I love that. And I was like, I am going to learn how to play piano. So I would go downstairs between two-a-days and I would just doodle around this piano. And I fumbled around enough to where I was going, I think I could do this. I think I could figure this out. So I started just sort of learning stuff by ear. As you know, it's just kind of I think sometimes you kind of have that gift or you don't have that gift.
Right. I don't think you can be taught. Right.
Right. And I was lucky. I think I kind of had it. So I just said, man, I love this. And I just kind of figured out that, if I just put, and I always listened to the bass. And I was kind of a bass singer. So I was like that,
Yep, exactly. You listen to the bass.
Yeah, so I mean, I always listened to it, so that would be the tonic. And then, of course, I had to learn that the tonic doesn't always mean that, that's what the chord is. Sometimes it's a C with an E bass. Or
yes,
whatever.
Yes.
So it's just that kind of thing you just learn, and then over time I figured it out more, and then I went off to college and did my thing, and then I was like, when I moved to Nashville, I still had people accompanying me, I was like, man, I'm going to have to learn how to play something. And I played guitar okay, but piano is what I really wanted to, I wanted to learn more than anything, so I just said, that's what I'm going to do, and so I did. I got a couple of pianos that were in storage. A buddy of mine was storing one of Hank Jr.'s CP70s.
Yep.
Gary Worth's, Larry Gatlin. I got three of these things for like $200 or $300 a piece. And you know how much those things weigh. They weigh about a ton.
Oh, I know. The early keyboards? Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. So it was a two-piece sort of electric grand pianos. And I would I got this little truck and I would put them together and I just started going to clubs. And the thing, I think that's what helped me learn how to entertain because I wasn't that good of a piano player. So I would pick all these simple songs that I could learn, like, Margaritaville or sing along, like the, Brown Eyed Girls or the classics that I would really learn. And I think I learned about 10 songs and did them over and over again and had people drinking. Of course, they were so drunk by the time I was done, they didn't even know that.
But you also sing well, too. I mean, if you didn't sing well, that would be a problem, too, singing out. I mean, you did both, right?
Well, the thing is I can always sing.
All right, to cover the bad chords.
I can always sing, but the whole thing is like learning how to accompany myself. So that, I always feel like You know, like guys like Bruce Hornsby, he's a piano virtuoso that can write and sing. You know, I feel like I'm more of a singer that can play pretty good and write pretty good. You know, so it's,
I don't know. Don't cut yourself short.
Now. I've gotten better and better. I think as the years have gone on and progressed, I'm getting better. I love it. I love, you know, I'm like, you can't walk by a piano and not play it. I just love it.
Right.
And,
yep.
So I just had knee surgery, which is funny.
Oh, really?
In January, both of my knees. And of course, from paying for the sins of my youth. Right. So, I literally had a month off.
Wow.
You know, where I was recovering from getting both of my knees completely replaced. So I just sat in my house, and it was wintertime. It was freezing cold. I had ice packs on my knees. But I went back, I had to get a walker to walk over to my piano. And I sat there for hours and just played. I really fell in love with piano again. And that's pretty awesome.
Amazing. And it took the pain away, right?
It really did. It was my release. And
yeah.
And I was playing every Elton John, Billy Joel song I knew, or Jackson Brown, or some of my old cuts that I'm like, holy crap, I forgot about that song, you know, for my first album, you know, 20 years ago. And so it was a lot of fun.
That's great. It's funny. You're answering questions that I've had prepared to ask, right?
I know.
In the past 5 minutes.
You know how I am, dude.
It's like perfect. It's perfect because I was going to ask you, what was the first pop song you tried to learn? And that was Easy by the Commodores, right?
Yeah.
I asked if you're ear trained, and you're basically ear trained. You just listened and learned it, which is incredible as well. I was going to ask you about your writing. Billy Joel, who I've heard a lot of different interviews with him, he said he was content with just being a writer. He never even envisioned becoming a pop star. He would have been content just sitting there and writing. Would you have been content to just songwrite in the background?
Well, I don't know. I think for me, no, probably. I think, you know, I mean, of course, Billy Joel is probably the reason I do what I do. I mean, I love him more than, you know, he is just like the most amazing, you know, writer to me. And you know, I've like you probably have heard just about everything he's ever done interview wise, you know, from Howard Stern to whatever. But
yep.
I love all of it, you know, because I think for me, I was always just I loved entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love being on stage. I love singing. I even love singing songs I didn't write. I mean, even though, you know, I always did. I just love
music.
I love music, and
sure.
And I don't know. I think for me, I love doing what I do.
Yeah, well, it shows every single time I've ever seen you. It actually shows. You took a hiatus, though. Did you not write anything for 7 years, or did you just take a hiatus from the road? Or
no, I mean, I've never stopped writing,
mm-hmm.
and I've definitely never stopped touring.
Right.
But for me, it was more of a, you know, you're going through label stuff, you're on a label, you're not on a label anymore. It's like, now it's different, you know, it's completely different than it used to be. I mean, we used to have to wait for a label to tell us when we could record, now I can look. I tour, I write songs, I put albums out anytime I want. And
the pressure's off a little bit.
It's so much easier.
Right.
So much easier.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, you don't have to go run around doing you know, different radio things or tours or whatever it may be, but because it's quite a whole different deal. You know what's involved in all that, Richie. It's a crazy, crazy, you know, you got to go do this radio tours, you got to do this and that, and you're doing all these shows and you're playing free shows, you're doing that. I'm going, good gosh.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because being on the air for so long, and we'd have artists come in and they look tired when they come in, and then when they're finished, you go, boy, that wasn't the best interview. Well, of course it wasn't. The person drove all night to get here. You have clue what that person, what Phil Vassar did before he came on the air with, not that you were like that, you were fantastic, but I mean, you don't realize what you're doing the other 364 days a year before you get to us, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's incredible.
You're kind of a zombie.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you're right. You're sort of a zombie for a while, you know, and you're trying just like hell just to stay awake. But anyway, it's part of it, and it's not glamorous as some folks think it is.
Right.
But there is a pretty wonderful life. I'm very blessed, and you know, I play, you know, over 100 shows a year still, every year, all over the world. And I mean, I'm just really, really lucky.
not as lucky as I am to be able to talk to Phil Vassar. That's who you're listening to right now. His new song, once again, is Fall Crazy. You can find it on Apple Music. That's where I found it. I'm sure it's on Spotify and the other services as well. Download it and enjoy it. Back to Phil.
Now, what was your schedule? You came to Albany. Do you remember what happened after that? You drove the next day. Were you playing someplace else the next night, like Massachusetts? What's that?
We played three shows that weekend. We played Albany, then we went over to the coast of Massachusetts, then we played Maine, and then they dropped me off at the airport, and I flew straight down to Naples, where I spent a week in the set on the beach. I needed it, you know, every once in a while. I'm kind of a beach bum anyway.
Sure. You mentioned beach bum. I'm reading the Mike Love story from the Beach Boys.
Oh my God, his autobiography.
And he was explaining, I was just reading it this morning, they would do like the follow the sun philosophy, meaning they would do a show, jump in an airplane, go to like Montana from New York or whatever, do another show. They do these shows the same day. He liked to do at least two shows the same day.
The Beach Boys always do two shows a day. I don't know how they did it.
How the heck?
Being a band, you know, I think you kind of have to. You got managers and labels and this and that. You got 5, 6, 7, 8 people, band, buses, truck. I mean, you almost have to do twice as much or three times as much. I mean, Chicago used to do 300 dates a year.
Oh, man.
I mean, think about that. I mean, that's just like craziness, you know? So yeah. You almost have to just to make enough money. You know, your managers make way more money than you do in those situations. It's crazy. Right.
Now, speaking of management, I was talking to a person that you manage. I had him on my podcast, Adam Rutledge.
Adam's awesome, man. You know, he's a great guy. And
great guy.
You know, he's a really talented cat. He's writing and recording and doing his thing now. And he's, you know, I mean, like Matt Ramsey came down from Virginia and wrote for me for 10 years. And Granger Smith and, you know, the Brothers Osborne. I mean, you think of some of these guys that have kind of, you know, worked with me or worked for me and I just think he's right in line with those guys. I really do. And Cam and people like that. That I just love new artists. I love seeing people that really work hard and are nice people.
Yep, exactly.
And everyone I just mentioned, man, every one of those guys, I mean, they're just as good a human being as they are talented, you know? And that's what I like to see, man. I can't deal with a douchebag. I can't deal with it.
Right, you know? Exactly. Sure, absolutely. So how many of these people do you manage? You're managing Adam Rutledge now, but is there anybody else that we know?
Well, you know what? We're just kind of slowly but surely, you know, getting into some of these and trying to help guys like Adam. And there's a million. We get so many people calling all the time. And it's like I just literally don't have much time to do, you know, especially now with Song from the Cellar coming out in the fall and on PBS in September. And that's going down and with TV. And
back up there, Songs for the Cellar. What is that?
Well, Songs from the Cellar is the show, my TV show that I'm actually airs on PBS in September.
Oh, no kidding! I didn't even see.
Yeah, and it's actually shot in my wine cellar in my house. The first season's already shot and all that. I had Peter Frampton, I had Styx, I had Tommy Shaw, John Rich, guys like Steve Cropper, you know, that wrote Dock of the Bay. All of these great singer songwriters. I actually even had Mike Tyson did my show. Carrot Top.
Oh man. Oh, I can't wait
to
see.
You know, man, it's like it's going to be really neat, Vince, and a bunch of other folks are, you know, doing it. I love songwriters, of course. So I've had Tony Arata. I had, Pat Alger, all these guys in the Rail of the Garth stuff. Mike Reed did one of my shows. He did I Can't Help Me Make You Love Me. And, I mean, just guys like that, you know, Cam actually did the show. Old Dominion's doing the show. Oh. Hunter Hayes did the show. So, I mean, it's fun to have some of the new artists also on. But I'm featuring some of those guys. But it's also some of the – every show I have a Hall of Fame songwriter do one of their great, humongous, you know. Cropper did Dock of the Bay and Midnight Hour, you know. So.
Oh, you must have had a blast. Now, this is kind of a takeoff or an extension of your podcast, right? You started a podcast that was in your basement.
Well, it wasn't a podcast more than anything. It was just kind of a little thing I did, especially it was over in England on Sky TV. But it was, it's just a TV thing here. And we're going to do a whole lot with it now. It looks like it's going to really expand and be a big deal. So it's kind of cool. We're doing but we're starting out here in the States on PBS this year, and then God only knows where it's going to end up in the next year or so. So it's going to be fun.
So it's kind of like a Daryl Hall's house type of thing. But
I love the thing Daryl did. You
that
know?
Was and
I,
great.
And I think it's great. I mean, he actually, we were supposed to do that at one point and couldn't make it work out. And you know, I was really kind of disappointed because, you know, I'm a humongous Hall & Oates fan. Daryl Hall is one of my favorite singers of all time and writers, you know. So it was, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I've got the wine. I'm a big wine guy and I love it. And,
yeah.
And so we're doing some stuff from the cellar here. And then I'll be doing stuff at Coppola and some other wineries too on the West Coast and East Coast, which is kind of neat.
Otherwise, you're not doing anything, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Trying to get my last one through high school, so here we go. You know, and so it's been great. I'm very, very lucky, Richie. And I'm just
that's great.
Actually, we're going out in the fall, in the winter too. Again, I did my Christmas tour this past year with Kelly Pickler, which was a lot of fun. And then this year, I'm doing it with Lone Star, so that'll be really fun too.
They're great. Now, is Richie McDonald still singing with Lone Star?
He sure is. Yeah, that's what made me think about it, Richie. I'm going, yes, a couple of Richies. We got to get you up there, man.
Oh, fun. That's right.
But Richie's doing the thing with Lone Star. We're doing the Christmas tour starting in November, and it's going to be great, man. It's called the Not So Silent Night Tour, so it's going to be kind of a lot of fun.
Great name. I want to go back to somebody that you mentioned. You mentioned Mike Reed. It's like you're reading from my notes here. It's really funny. On one of your albums, you had a song which I'd never heard before, Where Have All the Pianos Gone?
Right.
And I listened to that. I went, oh, man, that is so great. And then I'm thinking, where have all the pianos gone? And the only other people that I could think of that ever played the piano that made it in country music was Mike Reed had a couple of hits and Ronnie Millsap. But otherwise, you've really cornered the market. Why aren't there any other piano playing country artists?
I think it's kind of funny, but you're right. There's just not, you know, I mean,
yeah.
And everybody's always like, well, you know, piano doesn't work very well in our genre. And I'm like, well, you know, Mike Reed really basically quit. I mean, he was on a roll. He just hated touring.
Okay.
And of course, Millsap, how many hits did he have? About 100? 40 number one songs, at least, something like that.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, I mean, I've had at least 10 I know of, you know, so it's like, you know, Billy Joel, Elton John, Hornsby, they've all had pretty good careers.
Right.
Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, you know, there's a lot more of them, you know, so.
Yeah, but not in country.
You know, I mean, Jerry Lee Lewis had a pretty good career.
Right. But I'm saying
So I don't know. I just think there just aren't many out there. I think there's just a... Which is fine, you know. I don't mind carrying that torch, but
it's great.
You know,
you
always kind of wonder, you know, why there aren't more out there.
Yeah,
know? It's like everybody plays guitar, everybody wears a hat, everybody's like sings about trucks, everybody sings about beer and tractors and tailgates. And it's like if you were actually different in Nashville, they hate it. I don't understand why they do. It's like
you're reading my notes
like
again.
You can't hardly get through the doors unless, well, where's your truck song. Anyway.
You are listening once again to Take It to the Top with Phil Vassar. And just a programming note, if you go to my Facebook page, which is Ryman Richie Phillips, you'll see a photo of him in the studio when we were on the air years ago, him at the piano, and me with a you-know-what eating grin on my face as he's showing me all kinds of riffs that he does on the keyboard. Okay, let's go back to the interview.
We are 28 minutes in. I told you it'd be a half an hour. I don't want to keep you any longer than you want to be careful.
Good, man. I'm having fun talking to you.
I'm having a blast talking to you.
We can sure do this again. I like, don't make this the only time I get to do this one.
Well,
do this again.
Again, I don't want to be your stalker. I told you that.
I love it, Richie. I love it. You've always been, man. You're always so good to me. You always have been, and I'm just glad we've kept in touch. It's fun.
Oh, absolutely. All right, I'll have another question for you because I'm just fascinated by your process of writing. Again, I listen to podcasts and listen to interviews. And like James Taylor, let's take him for an example. I couldn't believe this.
I saw him Thursday night. He's my favorite, period. One of my favorites. It were him and Bonnie Raitt. I saw them both. And they were at Summerfest. I played there Saturday night, and they were there Thursday night. So I actually went up, saw him. Amazing. Freak show. How good.
What a talent.
70 years old.
I know.
You know, Bonnie Raitt, 67. I just wish every female artist would listen to Bonnie Raitt sing.
Yep.
And James, you don't have to scream and sing a high note on every song.
Exactly. You know?
Stop yelling at me.
Exactly. But James Taylor's process of writing, when I heard, I said, really? He'll go into his studio and just lay music down. No lyrics. I don't think he even has a thought in his head of what the topic is. He just lays music down. And then maybe like a year later, he'll sit there and listen to it. I think for this last album he did. there were years where he had this music laying around, and then he finally went off to some cabin and wrote all the lyrics. Could you write that way?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for sure. For me, it's definitely that way. I'll
really?
Either have a lyric. Yeah, I mean, I'll have a lyric, or I'll have musical ideas all over my phone. You know, and I have those, and that's usually what I write to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you don't know what it is until you know what it is. You know, it's almost like that. And I think you sort of, I don't know, every and then I'll say this is terrible, and then I'll rewrite it to another lyric. I mean, and sometimes it'll be a ballad, sometimes it'll be, you know, it's funny because I remember Mike Reed, of course, telling me, you know, he'd originally written "I Can't Make You Love Me" was a bluegrass up-tempo song. Like, I can't make you love me if you don't.
Really?
And it's what it was. And I think he said, you just never know. And then we just kept messing around. It just didn't seem right. And I remember, like, that's when I love you, when I need you, when I care about you. Do you remember that song?
Sure.
It was a big hit for me, but it was originally a ballad. It was like, huh. I love you, I need you, when I care. You know, it's like, when I hear you stop and laugh alone. It was a slow song. I kept, it's like, man, it's cool, but it just seems like it. So we went to the studio to record it for the record, and I kept just saying, no, let's do it faster, faster. And by the time it was over with, it was a really slamming up tempo song, you know. So
it's funny how, yeah, it evolves. You ever hear like the Beatles anthology albums? They'll have like when Paul McCartney sang "I'm Looking Through You," like the first take of that was "I'm looking through you." Where
yes.
did you go? Well, oh my god!
Oh, good.
Somebody must have yelled. George Martin must have said, "Step it up, boys."
Spiff it up a little bit, boys. Yeah. I mean, and I mean, we, you know, of course, I'm such a huge, massive Beatles fan. I've been to Abbey Road so many times and
really
and just hung out in that studio. I got a private tour. I've gotten to listen to all the masters and all that.
Oh, God.
I mean, they were remastering Imagine when I was in there, and they let me sit and see it. And I mean, it was like, oh, my gosh. It was actually one of the most moving experiences. You can ask Jeff, my guitar player. We went in together. And he's a bigger Beatles maniac than I am. He knows more about the Beatles than anybody I know. We were just creeping. It was so powerful.
Oh, for any musician, that's like the Mount Rushmore.
Mecca.
Yeah. We were on vacation in Barbados years ago, and we met this couple from England. And long, long story, very, very short. By the end of the week, they said, if you ever want to come to England, and we said, okay. And we went to their house. We stayed there for a week, and they took me to Abbey Road. I walked across the street. I walked right up those stairs. It almost felt like I could have walked in the front door.
I know. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and really, they're taking me to Liverpool. We're going in October, and we're going to go see take the Liverpool tour. I just cannot wait.
I was just there. You know, we were just there, too. We just got back from playing in the U.K. for 2 weeks, and we went to Liverpool. We did the whole thing, and
yeah.
went to the house in Strawberry Fields, and
oh yeah,
did the whole thing. And you know, it's just it's magic. You know, it's a magical thing, and
it really is.
And I don't know. I guess there's never going to ever that'll never happen again. You know, I don't think. But it's pretty fabulous. You know,
it's true. And one other thing, again, back to your songwriting. When you do collaborate with people, are you more the lyric guy? Are you more the music guy? Or does everybody do everything?
Well, you know, it just depends. I would say definitely, I'm definitely more of a lyric guy.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know. I always like to be kind of part of both. I mean, I think that's probably why I've had, you know, a lot of songs that I've written by myself like that, you know. But my, you know, musically, I try to keep it as simple as I can.
Right.
You know, just so the lyric has a nice place, nice bed to lay over top of, you know.
Sure. That's funny. I pictured you more the music guy for some reason.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, of course, I like being the music guy too. I like being part of that, and
mm-hmm.
you know. But I tend to think that my musical, let's say, chordal knowledge, you know, is pretty simple. I try to keep it as simple as I possibly can, and you know, I can always tell. I'm more of a sort of a rhythmic writer lyrically, and
mm-hmm.
you know, like almost like a rapper. I write like a rapper.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like how I like to write.
Uh-huh. Well, if you did come in with a song that had all kinds of chord changes, that especially years ago, that never would have fit Nashville, right? It was always like three chords in a dream in the early days.
That's all it is. Now it's the same chords.
Yeah, right.
same one, six minor, four or five. It used to be 1-4-5, but it's definitely a different time. But I think that I'm really looking for something innovative. I can't wait for this, the Bohemian Rhapsody movie to come out about Queen, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about it because you really could sort of do that then. It's like you can't do that anymore, you know. It's not going to get played on radio. There's no place for that kind of stuff anymore.
Right.
You can't create another Queen, you know. And
right. If it's not done in 3 minutes, they don't want to hear you, you know.
Yeah, and it's even pop's just as bad. It's just the same thing. But, you know, we play over there a good bit. So I was in Montreal. I was playing over in Switzerland, and I took my daughter with me. She's for 16th birthday, and it was pretty special because, you know, my daughter now, of course, is a singer-songwriter. She's killing it.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's great.
So she's doing really well. She's in New York City, so I'm really, really proud of this kid. You know, of course, she loves music. She loves it. She's like, Dad. She was always like, play me something. Play me something cool. And she'd play, of course, she'd be listening to Justin Bieber.
Right.
But when Ed Sheeran came out, she knew it was great. She's like, this guy's good, Dad. This is cool, right?
Sure.
She's like, play me something. So I play her Bohemian Rhapsody, and she just sat there with her mouth open for about, 8 minutes. And she's like, Dad, that's the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard.
And she had never heard it before.
You know, so it was that, and she would play me something else, and then I would play her, a Merle Haggard song or something, Jimmy Buffett or Come Monday, or I'd play her, definitely Billy Joel or some of my great heroes, right? She's like, Dad, you play me something, I'll play you something, and it was really, really fun. And
that's great.
So I took her to the studio and into Freddie Mercury's place over there, and where he cut Under Pressure with David Bowie, and she sat in that room. I couldn't get her to leave. It's really fascinating what's happened, and playing her a James Taylor song is she just loves it. She just listens to it, and she's just like, Dad, this is just. She hates that. She hates. I mean, there's so much music she hates now. She goes, Dad, I can't even listen to it.
Wow.
So if you want to be a cool chick singer, listen to Blondie, right?
But that's great. She's open to country. She's open to everything. She's just taking everything in. Can't wait to see.
She loves all of it. She really does.
Well, you're the same way, right? I mean, you love everything. You seem to love
everything. Well, I do. I think you need to. I think it's,
right.
Man, it's like I've heard country artists say, I don't get the Beatles. Or the Eagles. I don't get the Eagles. And I just want to go. I'm like, you are an idiot. It's like, A, you can't understand it because you suck. Or B,
you're
like,
close-minded, right?
And it's like, if you don't understand the Beatles, or if you can't listen musically to something that's incredible, or know what something's good, or Jackson Brown song, or
right.
It's like, well, it ain't country. It's like, then you're just an idiot. I'm sorry, but you're just an idiot.
Yes, when I first started at GNA, that was the attitude of 90% of the people. I remember our program director back then, because I've been on there 30 years. I remember them saying, "Don't even mention a song that isn't country." To him,
yeah, but it's not country. It's not. It's like Merle Haggard was one of my dearest friends, right?
Wow.
And we would sit on the bus for hours. I mean, Merle Haggard was one of the greatest men I ever met. And just to sit, I've sat. In the seat with Willie Nelson for hours, Kenny Rogers, and these men, let me tell you what, they love music. They love songwriters.
Yep.
I mean, Merle Haggard and I would sit and talk about Tom Petty and Bob Dylan, how amazing their songs were, and Bruce Springsteen. And these guys loved Merle Haggard. I mean, because you
sure.
know what? Because he was a genius songwriter. You know, he was a great, great songwriter. Billy Joel's a great genius songwriter. Elton John, all these guys.
Yep.
They all love Merle Haggard because he was an incredible singer, songwriter. And that's what it's all about. But Don Henley, I mean, Glenn Frey, these men are amazing writers, right? Jackson Brown. And for you to sit there and tell me that it's terrible, it's like,
right.
Or Paul McCartney or John Lennon or George Harrison and Ringo Starr. It's like, it's not just it's just narrow-minded crap,
right?
You know,
right. The one genre thinking instead of,
well, it's not. I mean, that's not an, even, like I said, Johnny Cash loved those guys,
mm-hmm.
and so did Waylon Jennings. You know how many times we sat there with Waylon Jennings and I mean, when I was a kid, 22, 23 years old, listening to the stories that Conway Twitty would tell about songwriting. Let me tell you something. That cat loved songwriters, and he loved them all. You know, so.
Now, how about Billy Joel or Elton John or any of those? Have they ever acknowledged you? Because you're
I did actually meet Elton John one time. I've never gotten a chance to meet Billy Joel, which is a
huh.
It's something I hate because we've had a couple of chances, and we have a mutual friend, John Small, who's in Attila. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember the name. Yep.
He was in the band with
the original band. Yep.
Yeah, he's one of Billy's dear friends, and he's my neighbor, actually.
Huh.
And John's a genius videographer himself, man. He does all this stuff. He's a great TV producer and does all kinds of great stuff. But he's tried to set that up a couple times, but it's never ever worked out, and which bums me out, you know, to some extent. But
he's got to know who you are. He's got to listen to.
Well, you know what? I don't. I would think so, yes, you know, but I'm not going to sit here and, well, he's got to know who I am, but I mean,
yeah.
But you know, he's definitely my hero, and I'm sure he probably knows that, so I've said it enough to enough people.
Does
sure
it work,
gotten back to him.
Does it work out that, like, if you ever covered a Billy Joel song or covered one of these artists' songs, do they ever call you up and say, hey, nice job, or is it very rare that they would ever acknowledge you covering the song?
You know what? I think it happens, you know, I do know Bruce Hornsby, and I, you know, we've had conversations, and of course he's really, he's one of my favorites, you know, mm-hmm. too. And
what a keyboard
player.
You know,
as a piano player, you know, you're not going to get better than Bruce Hornsby.
No,
really.
He's unbelievable. Yeah.
He's a really great guy. And of course we talked several times. We were going to do something together on, you know, you really like Carlene. He said, Phil, that song, I love that song. I'm like, really? Ooh. No doubt. That's awesome. But, I mean, that's a big honor when guys like that say stuff like that.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I said, you know, The Way It Is and Every Little Kiss and Mandolin Range, those songs changed my life. I mean, he doesn't understand. Of course, he doesn't do them as much in concert. He's such a muso and such a great jazz player that I think he's like, you know, that's over. You know, he goes on, and he's beyond all that. And I think which is different. I say, well, I think you can never discount, especially to guys like me, what that meant to me, you know, and you know, listening to that first album and the second album and the third. Of course, I've gotten every album every time.
That's
but they're all so wonderful, you know, but he's really such a great, great, great player. You know, I love it.
That's like Elton John for me. I remember the very first time I ever saw Elton John, it was on the Merv Griffin show. I don't know if you remember him. But,
oh, of course. You know, I bought my dog from Merv Griffin. You know,
yeah, really?
My dog, yeah, my dog Sammy that just died. She was 16. Like, I got him from Merv, from his, I don't know, his private, I mean, we did a little thing for him. I did a thing called Child Help USA. This has been years ago.
Huh.
When I first came out. But I got my dog from his pedigreed line. It was she was a black lab, and she just passed away like plus 2 years ago. So, oh. Of course, I know Merv Griffin.
Oh, so how it's so interesting.
Got my dog from him. It's so crazy.
That is so crazy. And I just remember as a kid, I think I was maybe, I don't know how old, 13, maybe 14 years old, and Elton John came on, and he played your song, and I just heard it like, bring, ding, 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 bring, ding. And I went down in the basement like you did, and I got the 45. I played it at like 33 and a third speed or whatever the lowest speed I could play.
Smart.
Right? And I just would go, bling, ding, 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 ding. And then what you were talking about, how he would take a chord, but he would play a completely different bass, not the tonic bass, but he would play.
Right.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know people listening probably are not going to, but I would say, oh my God, that changes the chord completely when it's a different bass like that. And
yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, and you're saying your song, I think that was one of the first songs I ever realized that on too. You know,
yeah.
I was like, holy crap. And so it wasn't as easy to learn as I, you know, some of the songs that I tried to learn before. I'm like, I don't understand. Why is he doing this? Why
right.
is he putting the bass? And you know, of course, Bernie Taupin wrote all those cool lyrics.
Yes.
But let me tell you, Elton John, let me tell you, that the musically, what he did and what he does is just absolutely unbelievable. He's just a master of melody and you know, sorry seems to be the hardest word. Some of those songs and the piano stuff he did in that, it's absolutely mesmerizing.
Oh my God. And their process of writing, they've never been in the same room, Bernie Taupin and Elton John, ever. Bernie always mails it to Elton John. What's that?
It's so bizarre.
I know. How that works, I don't know. It's just the creative
so
process. There's no real answer to the creative process, how people do it. There's no one set way. There'll never be.
Right?
It just, however it gets.
Well, I hope not. You know, I hope not. I love that people do it so differently and create differently. And, you know, I think that's how you come up with different results. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody did it the same way every time, which I think they kind of do here in Nashville. But that's kind of, I think, why they come up with the same song all the time. But I think, you know, that guys like Elton John and Billy Joel and Taupin and people that and Queen, you know, I keep going back to guys like that just changed the world,
oh,
right?
What a genius. Oh, that song.
I know it.
Oh, unreal. Want to play it. I was so nervous about it. But I didn't even touch it. And my wife is ribbing me. He's like hitting me in the ribs with her. She goes, get up there. I said, oh my God. And I sat down and played a little bit. Oh my God. Just to put my hands on that keyboard. And it's not the greatest shaped keyboard. It looks like it's been through the war, but I'll tell you. Oh yeah. That was just such a thrill. Nashville is such an incredible place. I'd love to live there.
It's a great town, and it really is. You know, they're trying to tear down all that stuff and, you know, put up condos now, but I tell you, it's really, really an amazing place as far as creativity. And,
yep.
You know, I mean, I just think about, you know, heck, my neighbors are, you know, not just Kix Brooks and whatever, but they're Sheryl Crow and they're Tommy Shaw from Styx and Steve Tyler. It's like people, you know, they're just, you know, I think the whole world is realizing what Nashville is and what kind of town and what kind of creative energy there is. You'll be sitting there and you're talking to Jonathan Cain is, you know, of course, here. He's one of my neighbors, too, from Journey. And everybody. It's just that you just, you know, it's a
great place to be.
It's not just country music, but it's a
music
mecca, you know. And that's what I love about it. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot here.
You're in a great place. Well, I'm just having a blast talking to you, but I don't want to keep you any longer. It's so, again, biggest four-letter word I associate you with is so nice that you spent this time. I really, really can't tell you what it means to me to do this, and I'm going to spread this podcast around everywhere.
Me too, buddy. Me too. I love it, and it's good talking to you and catching up.
It really is.
Let's do it again soon, man. You
love to.
Keep me posted. I'm always around, and you caught me at a perfect time. It's 4th of July week.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Actually, I'm coming to New York City. I'm doing the Friday concert series out there on Fox, I guess, on Friday, but so I'll be in the city doing that on Friday morning and then back to Indianapolis that night. So it's kind of one of those deals. I'm doing the Beach Boys two shows in one.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Or the
Following the Sun, baby. Following the Sun.
Or the Phil Collins thing now. You got to go from like one post, one country to another, right?
That's what you do. I don't mind.
Phil Vassar, thank you so much. Well, there is that old adage that if you enjoy what you're doing, it seems to spread to other people. And I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. I just had an absolute blast talking to him. And I realize there are a lot of dated references in there, dated references to where he's going to be and so forth. By the time you listen to this, it'll be long past. But I did it purposely to show you what these artists actually do when they're not on the radio or maybe doing a one-shot on a morning show or something like that. And move over James Brown. This guy might be the hardest working man in show business, Phil Vassar. So check out his new single. I'm sure he's going to have a new album coming out soon. Check out his new special, The Songs from the Cellar. Or is it the basement? Well, I'm in the basement. He was in the cellar. You can check that out. I believe that's on Fox, and it's going to be in September. I am not going to be on Fox, but I'm going to be at the Eden Cafe, which is a nice little cafe in Loudonville. It is 269 Osborne Road in Loudonville, New York, for a special little country night, actually. And to be even more specific, it's a country piano bar night. We set it up exactly like a piano bar, and I wanted to do it in a small, intimate place so everybody can kind of sit around the piano if they're not sitting in seats that are really very close to the piano. And yes, this is a dated reference, but I'm going to be there July the 20th, which is a Friday night from 7:30 until 9:30 p.m. But if you miss that, I'm also going to be there on November the 2nd, which is also a Friday, once again from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., they serve food. They also have craft beer and fine wines. Maybe we can get them to sell Phil Vassar wine. Come on out and enjoy it. I'm going to do some Phil Vassar songs. I asked him, and he gave me permission. plus some old country songs, some new country songs, and some anecdotes of some of the stars that I have had the amazing privilege to meet while on the radio all those years. So please come out. I would really, really appreciate it. You can go to eventbrite.com and just type in Richie Phillips and get all the information. The tickets are only really like $7.50 to come in there. If you want to sit around the piano, he charges a little bit more. Check it out. Make your reservations because it's a very, very small place. If you enjoy the piano bar atmosphere, you're going to love it. I will also put all the contact information in the show notes under this episode. And I'll be, in the meantime, looking for the next topic. If you have an idea, you can go to my Facebook page, which is Ryman Richie Phillips on Facebook. Tell me who you would like on the show, and I will try as hard as I can to...
take it to the top. To the top.
And if you like what you're hearing, please hit subscribe. That way you'll be the first to know about upcoming episodes.